to tell you again, this is the Taylor Report. It's CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Conan is here. And I think we are joined now by our good friend Lebanie, who is a Burundian American. And we need to ask him about developments there. You're there, Lebanie.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, thanks very much. We're keen to talk to you because you have recently returned from Burundi. Burundi is much in the headlines these days. And I guess we have to ask you off the top, the shock story of about in the past month was the assassination. I shouldn't say month, it's only been 2 weeks, assassination of a cabinet minister in Burundi. And of course, it raises once again the specter of: is there a regime change policy that's still being conducted there against the government of Burundi? Tell us about the incident and what you think of it.
Yeah. So there was an assassination of a minister on New Year's Day at night. And that's the first, actually, assassination of a minister.
Yes, you have had killings of what? I guess army officers, metro officials, that sort of thing. There have been people killed there.
Yes, but there was also an attempt on the president's communication advisor about a month ago. That attempt failed. Thank God. And then you had, on New Year's Eve, you have this assassination attempt that succeeded this time around against a minister of of water and environment. He was a. It came as a shock, because it's like not someone who is politically active, loud, very quiet. One thing that's important is that this minister is from the Tutsi minority. And a few days before, if you go on social media, a lot of extremist opposition, Tutsis specifically, were accusing them of being traitors. They were accusing Tutsis from the ruling party of being traitors.
Those who cooperate and participate in this government of Nkurunziza are being treated, being alienated by the external, isn't it? The external leadership of the...
Yeah. Now, mind you, in Burundi, you have, you've always had two different sides. Ethnically, you've never had a strong unity in Burundi. So when the Tutsi government was in power, they had a lot of Hutus with them. And same things right now with the Hutu government. You have a lot of Tutsis. Burundi is a classic example of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But in Burundi, it's my best friend. So you have a lot of Tutsis who support the current government, because if you look way past, they're also divided with the other Tutsis that are today in opposition. So that's it might be a bit confusing, but so the ones who are in opposition today were threatening the current ones, calling them traitors, putting out their profile pics on Facebook, and then suddenly we hear they killed one of the Tutsis from the ruling party.
Who's
the minister?
By the way, I believe there's a good website people could go to for this, for background on this. It's Ikihiro, Ikiriho, IKIRIHO.org. Some of this is very well accounted for there. So tell me, let me tell our listeners, by the way, just so they know that we're talking about the two ethnic groups. The demographics of Burundi are similar to the demographics of Rwanda. The Tutsi population is somewhere between 10% and 15%, and the Hutu population is somewhere around 85%. And that's and it's been a historically difficult matter. And no thanks to the Belgians for the role they played in this. Now, tell who is behind the attempt to remove the government of Curran Caesar, in your view?
So what I learned from some of the folks in the country is these people, they use the same rhythm of assassination that they have used since last year. A lot of people who were part of this extremist opposition, I'll call them terrorists, because they were throwing grenades on people, throwing grenades in houses, throwing grenades in restaurants. So when they caught some of them, a lot of them actually, and went through their cell phones and saw their WhatsApp messages, mm-hmm. they found out it's the same cycle of the killing machine. What did they do? Since they failed to fight militarily, they tried to do a rebellion, and it failed miserably. They were crushed. Mm-hmm. So whenever you lose in a battle, you turn to terrorism. Now, the terrorism has the same exact cycle. Mm-hmm. The way it starts with the extremist opposition who are mainly in Belgium, but they're also Burundians who are in Canada mm-hmm. and in France, but mostly Belgium and Canadian, Burundian. They come together, they make the fundraise money, then they send it to Rwanda, where you have a lot of the people, the Putschists, mm-hmm. who are still connected with a lot of ex-combatants and military. And you have to understand, Burundi is a country that that had war for 15 years, and mm-hmm. it's a very poor country, mm-hmm. very poor country. So if you raise $10,000 and send it to an ex-fighter who's in Burundi, doesn't matter if it's Hutu, Tutsi, no, this is a poor guy, say, hey, all you have to do is go kill this person, and you get $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
That for him is a lifetime of money he'll never get.
Yes.
And he's killed before in fights. He'll mm-hmm. be like, thank you. So it's easy for them to, this network is the same. Mm-hmm. Again, they fundraise in Belgium and Canada, send mm-hmm. the money to the guys who are in Rwanda, the ex-putschists. They call the people, they have a network of ex-fighters, ex-combatants, ex-military who are just retired and have nothing to do, and they give them the money. You know,
mm-hmm.
Those people take the money and they go and they'll throw a grenade at someone. They'll take a pistol and try to shoot someone who's a leader so that it makes world headlines, because that's terrorism. You want it to resonate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same cycle that they do right now. So this killing here has the exact same rhythm.
Yes.
And I just read today in the newspapers an interview about the killing of the minister, and I learned a lot of stuff from it. I was saying that he was killed by someone who knew him, who was in the car with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit uglier.
Yes.
But also, the minister was not with his security guard.
I was struck by that. I think it was something really important to underline, that apparently he had refused to have security.
No, actually, he had security, but that night, I think he was meeting some lady.
Uh-huh.
So I guess he's trying not to be with the security, not to be seen.
This may turn out not to have any necessarily direct political link to the other problems. It may be something else. Is that possible?
I can't throw away any possibility. Mm-hmm. The investigations are not done yet. They say they have apprehended 6 people
mm-hmm.
who were around the scene.
Yes.
And so I'd hate to give some information, and then next week when the findings come out,
yes.
it's a whole different story.
Yeah. So, well, I know you will not mislead us. let's talk about the larger picture. We had the last time Burundi was in the news big time was when Samantha Powers visited Burundi and acted in a very arrogant manner, in my opinion, toward the president of the country, use pretty much the language that we associate with regime change, which is we're telling you you should go, and therefore opening the doors to violence and basically inciting it, but also calling for international criminal court to prosecute President Curran Caesar. But that seems to be that policy doesn't seem to be so successful. What do you What is the present stance of the Burundian government and the U.S. And the matters of the International Court, if you could talk about that?
First of all, when she came to Burundi with her statements of, she threw the term genocide on us, first of all. Before the election happened, she threw the word genocide on us.
Mm-hmm.
That woman was evil. Mm-hmm. She had a personal stake in the conflict because the radio where the coup d'etat took place is the radio that she co-founded. Mm-hmm. And the main guy who took up arms to fight the government, Mr. Alexis Nduhije, was her very good friend. The relationship, there's a lot of rumors in Burundi about their relationship, mm-hmm. but they're very close friends. And mm-hmm. he's been accused by the United Nations, first of all, of having being a warlord. This is back in 2013.
The UN has accused him of being a warlord.
Yes. There's mm-hmm. a report that came out in 2013 accusing him of being a warlord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was in charge of a lot of the grenades that were throwing in Bujumbura, the shooting of the U.S. accused him. The U.S. Mm-hmm. accused him of being behind the targeted killing of leaders in Burundi.
Mm-hmm.
That's her palm. And that's her stake. She wants him to be in power, mm-hmm. you know? And so she has been a nightmare against Burundi, and that's why everything has failed, because she was working incoherently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she was working logically, maybe she would have had success, but she had too much passion for a failed cause. Mm-hmm. Burundians are so far ahead from her thought. Her thoughts, in a tweet that she put out, was mm-hmm. elections in Burundi coming up, something about Rwandan genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever compare us to the Rwandan genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Rwanda has always had a very homogenous society when it comes to power. Mm-hmm. Burundi is very tricky. You have a lot of mixtures mm-hmm. in power.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, the army is very mixed. In government, it's mixed 60-40. I mean, there's a lot of mixtures, and there are a lot of loyalties that are intra-ethnic in our societies, in power and in opposition. So mm-hmm. she came over with a broken foundation, talking about genocide.
Yes.
Because...
Well, but of course, that's the accusation that works, right? I mean, if you can get people to buy that idea, then you can enforce policies to. Now...
And to get you funding for civil society organizations like FIDH. When mm-hmm. they ring the genocide alarm, they get funding. And then there's no genocide. They say, yes, that's because we took preventative measures, so we were successful.
Mm. Yes.
It's a win-win for them.
It's a win-win kind of propaganda game. Yes.
And she was the head of that. She accused Nkurunziza and his government of all the evils of this earth. And yes. everything she said came out to be false, thank God. Mm-hmm. She's in her own world. And in Burundi, we can't wait for 10 days now before she's out of the office.
Yeah. Now, you've had the development of Mr. Nkapa, a former president of Tanzania, was invited to be a mediator between the various parties there, that is the armed opposition or the people who engage in illegal activities and whatnot. And some of what you're saying, he repeated as well. He said this issue of President Nkurunziza is not should not be on the table because Mr. Nkurunziza is in power legally, and therefore he said that's not going to be part of what we argue about. And I noticed that he is being insulted and mocked and. They seem to be very desperate, those who were able to create a conversation in which they had a mediator, Mr. Nkapa. Mm-hmm. But they're not. They don't seem to be happy with the way it's going.
First of all, two things. Number one, Mkapa said nothing at all surprising. Mkapa said, everything I've been coming to tell you on this show is what he said.
Uh-huh.
The problem is the fake news, mm-hmm. which are the CNN.
Yes, there is a problem of fake news. Yes.
The Reuters. No, I'm serious. I went back the other day and just read old articles since the crisis, during the crisis of last year, of 2015. Mm-hmm. And nothing correlates to reality. And if you were to grade them, you'd be embarrassed. They were so off on everything, every prediction, every statement. They were off in everything. And Mkapa just came back and said what people on the ground have been saying the whole time.
Yes.
He said the question of a third term was approved by the country's highest court. Number two, the East African highest court, okay?
Yes.
Went and said, yes, this is a legal mandate. And they signed and sealed it. These are not Burundian judges. These are judges from all East African countries.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, who is he to tell the highest court, just two of the highest courts, just approve this candidacy? So they said the whole thing of a third term was not an argument. He said his goal as a facilitator is going to be to facilitate the next elections for 2020. Organize yourselves. If you have something against him, or something against the so-called bad governance, say present it, and people will vote for you. You know, it's time not right now to get ready for elections in 2020. It's already 2017.
Yes.
That's what we've been saying for so long. But, and I've been saying it on your show and everything, these people don't want elections because they're not popular.
Well, they won't win. It's rather like the RPF problem in Rwanda. If you had a real election, what would happen?
Yeah. But even in Burundi, the second most populous party in all elections, by the way, all elections, has always been Agathon Rwasa. He has, since 2010, has been second. And guess what? He joined the government. He's in government. So the two most popular parties, and by miles, by far, are in government. But the one opposition that the fake news media will tell you that's the real opposition, which is called the SNARED,
yes,
they are actually, they were caught a few weeks ago. They were caught. Someone caught the application, sorry, a certification as a Belgium organization. The SNARED is registered as a Belgian organization in Belgium.
Yes. Well,
and if you hear...
That's interesting, that's interesting DNA.
Yes, I mean... We've been
the name Belgium resonates in Burundi, I'm sure.
We've been saying for so long, and Belgium is the problem. The problem is Belgium. And when we came out, and this opposition that's in on Reuters, on AFP every day, that they say is the main opposition, is based in Belgium and is registered in Belgium. And that has been a blow to them. And the facilitator himself said that he does not want violent people. Like the UN asked, no violent actors should be in the dialogue. And they are violent. They have called on audio for killings of government people and for throwing grenades. They've taken responsibility. And so the facilitator said he doesn't want those people.
Well, now, Lebanese, that raises something that very important. There is a shift in the larger sphere that we should locate. And I know you have spoken about this in the past, and that is that we are in a new circumstance now where when Samantha Power, say, when she came in with her, with Obama and all these people, they were the sole power, and they said it'll be our way or no way. I mean, you would do as they wish. But now there is a shift. For reasons known to them, the Russians have begun to exercise their power at the United Nations as a member of the Security Council. China also seems to have its own voice, and this is impacting matters. Talk about that.
First of all, Russia, I guess, is very good because they were able to win an election here.
Yes, how about that?
Apparently.
Yeah, Hillary said, my enemy is Putin, and the people voted for Putin.
That's
the way the ball bounces.
I guess that's amazing. What happened is, it is history, and history is shifting when it comes to global power. I think Russia was a sleeping giant for so long. And what happened after Gaddafi's fall, the Russians and Chinese went to apologize to the African leaders, because Russians and Chinese have always voted in line with the AU. But when it came to Gaddafi, they got tricked by the French, who went over the resolution. And eventually, was a resolution to bring in troops just to bring peace, peacekeepers.
Yes.
But that, just by passing that resolution, the French went above it and actually started bombing like crazy Gaddafi until they killed him. Yes. And the Russians apologized to the African countries.
That's interesting. I had not heard that. Yes.
Yes. And they said from now on with the Chinese, they're going to continue have a pro-Africa policy. Mm-hmm. And that's because they are trying also to get influence when it comes to African markets.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an interest to say, hey, I am with you.
Yeah.
And tiny Burundi, small Burundi was the first time they exercised those muscles.
Mm-hmm.
When, to my shock as well, mm-hmm. the first resolution that Samantha Power had beautifully carved against Burundi, both mm-hmm. China's and Russians vetoed it.
Mm-hmm.
They went five times, they tried. Veto, 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 veto. Uh-huh. And these people, this was symbolic because Burundi has no strategic interest in them, does mm-hmm. not give them anything. But I think it was a sign to show that, hey, now we have appeared on the global scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here we are.
Well, now, yes. There's a business issue, too, you point out. I, of course, worked in Tanzania for some length of time. There is a railroad, the railway that runs from Dar es Salaam to Burundi, and I believe it was built by China some years ago for their good friend, Mr. Nyerere, whose stock is rising these days, I noticed. And once again, Nyerere's name is back. Chinese business practices with Burundi, this is rather important, isn't it? Because the U.S. basically took the policy of sanctions, which means we intend to starve you.
Yes, that's the policy that mostly the EU, and when you say EU, it's Belgium, because mm-hmm. Netherlands, Germany have no influence in Burundi, it's Belgium. So mm-hmm. the EU have put sanctions on us to the point where they have refused to pay our troops who've been in Somalia fighting.
Mm-hmm.
For over a year. Some of them even died 3 weeks ago in an ambush. And I feel bad because these people died for nothing, mm-hmm. without getting paid, nothing, because of this evil Belgians are still pushing for a regime change.
Mm-hmm.
So the railway actually was an old railway, and it's not all patched up. So the Chinese have won a contract to rebuild a strong railway that goes from, two of them actually, that goes from Dar es Salaam into Burundi. Tanzania is a gold mine for the Chinese. They promised this week to build them 200 factories for mm-hmm. different products. Chinese are very popular in Africa right now because they for the first time in the history, they're a partner who has developed Africa. No single Western partner has ever developed Africa.
Mm-hmm.
By that, when I was in Kenya, I just saw Kenya how. Ever since the Chinese came, Nairobi is today, Kenya is ballooning economically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go to Uganda, it's Chinese helping. You know, Tanzania, it's Chinese helping. You know, Belgium, I don't know why even Burundi still maintains a relations with this country that has only brought sadness, mm-hmm. genocides, wars, murders. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of Burundi right now are calling for the Belgian embassy to be closed. I am one of them. I hope that they close that embassy.
Yeah, but if you're going to say that, we're going to have to give you a chance to tell us why. I mean, it would, you think it practically would be a good step? Would it bring an end to some of this intrigue that goes on? What kind of things would be the benefit from that?
The question is, what do we benefit from our friendship with Belgium?
Okay.
There's no answer. Economy, yeah. I don't see what they built.
So you it could only be better. That's the argument.
There's nothing we are going to lose if mm-hmm. we have no relations with Belgium. We don't, you know, if they were honest with us, the Belgians, if they were honest with us,
mm-hmm.
then we would work together. But mm-hmm. they're very two-faced. They'll tell you one thing, always a good thing. They're an old democracy. They know diplomacy. But on the other hand, they have a knife and they're hurting, they're cutting you.
Yeah. Well, by the way, we should clearly link racism and colonialism. So then the idea that they are the natural superiors is a part of the colonial philosophy. It's somewhat incurable unless you end colonialism, right?
And that's why we need to seize our relations to the Belgians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have that attitude. They show it to us. They tell it to us indirectly. Whereas, I mean, I'm not saying the Chinese are gods. When they all come, they all take away from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But when the Chinese comes to you, he doesn't come to you and treat you like a zero.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to you sort of a business partner and promises not to have any political, not to get involved in politics.
Yes.
The same way the British do it in their colonies, you
yes.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you're kind of respecting the person if you don't get involved in the politics. To say,
yes.
hey, you run your country.
Well,
we just want to do business.
Yes. Well, if you were to raise the subject of colonialism with the Chinese, they could say to you, oh, would you like us to give you a big book with a lot of chapters? Because
yes.
we'd like you to hear the history of Hong Kong or the British in Shanghai.
Yes.
They know quite a bit about it. I mean, you know, it's the old thing. People always say, well, we should be suspicious of their motives, I suppose. But they also remember they have a long history of being friendly to former colonies. They do. It is a fundamental understanding, and it can't be shared by people in colonial capitals who still have old world ideas.
Yes, but also their interests in Africa are very. The African policy is very different. Is the opposite of the West.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I say that is they are trying to gain the market from the, because it's one market, right? It's one pie.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get it from the West, the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that? The number one interest from the French and the Belgians, for example, is to keep Africa very poor so they can keep plundering like they have for the last 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
Keep us poor, they come with aid, and they say, oh, here you go, but they take all the timber, all the gold, all the leather on the side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's their policy. The Chinese came and said, you know what? If we do that, we're going to lose because those people, they already have all the markets. So Chinese policy has been to empower Africans
mm-hmm.
so that Africans can buy the cheap goods and so that Africans can hire their construction companies, you know? And mm-hmm. so China's way of entering, of improving our economies, of making it better, the lifestyle better, has hurt Europeans from keeping us cheap
yeah.
and educated. And so it's a battle that China needs a strong Africa so it can trade with us.
Yeah. Well, that's
that hurts a lot the countries from Europe.
Well, you have summed it up nicely once again. Lebanon, thank you very, very much. It's always great to talk to you, and this is a great story about Burundi. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. It's the Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM, and I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Conlon has been here with us. So we appreciate the reportage, particularly on the matter of Lac-Mégantic. We'll follow that story. Tell you again, there's going to be a draw. So all you folks who contributed in our fundraising, you have a chance, and it will be on Sunday, January 15, 6 p.m., during the program across the universe. And this is a trip for two to Iceland, Iceland on a nice January day, that's what you're thinking. I need to get away. I need to go to Iceland. So at any rate, it's the Taylor Report and Ian Charlotte. Thank you very much. And Indigenous Waves is coming in, and we will see you next week.